Deplorable Nation, a podcast where your voices can be heard, where things that affect you and your family are important, because it's important to all of us. Every one of us matters and everybody has a voice. We're going to be bringing you news, current events, and throw in a lot of humor. And then you decide for yourself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Deplorable Nation. I'm your host, Deplorable Janet. This is episode number 34, Break Stuff. Today, welcome my special guest, Paul. Mr. Paul, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. And I just want to say thank you so much for reaching out to me and telling me your story so that we could talk about this, because what we're going to talk about today is a diagnosis that most people have never heard of before. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your history?
Let's see. I've had an issue, I guess, since my parents got a divorce and whatnot. And that's when it kind of came out. And then it finally got real bad. And I finally was diagnosed in my mid to late 20s. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and intermittent explosive disorder. And everything just kind of went downhill and went to hell from there. I had a pretty decent life before the divorce. And then after divorce is, you know, I kind of lost my shit.
So, are you married? Do you have kids?
I am married. I've been married now 29 years. I've been with my wife 34 years, and I have two adult children and a 7-year-old granddaughter.
So were your wife and kids around when a lot of this was going on, or was it just you and your wife?
No, when it really hit the fan, my children were born. I think they were probably I think my daughter might have been around 6, and then I mean my son about 4 or 2 years apart. So they were witness to everything that happened.
So it's funny, when they diagnosed you with bipolar disorder, did they tell you which type of bipolar that you have?
No, they never did. They gave me the basic 2, and then they gave me the almighty personality disorder unspecified. And I'm like, what in the hell is that? Like, what in the world?
We all have a personality disorder unspecified, I think.
Oh, without a doubt.
But you know, it's funny that you said the bipolar disorder and you have no idea which one. Mm-mm. And I want people to understand that bipolar, there's a questionnaire that you have to answer to be diagnosed. And the questions are very vague, very generalized, and pretty much touch on everybody in society. So I kind of want to go over that briefly just to give people an idea of what we're talking about. But what we really want to get into today is the intermittent explosive disorder, which, wink, wink, is another one of those disorders that's they don't know anything about really, other than very little. So let's go over the bipolar questionnaire.
Sure. It'll be the first time for me.
Exactly. I'm diagnosing you now while we're on the phone. And I just want to say the reason why I want to go over this is because there are so many people that are grossly misdiagnosed or told they have something when they don't, because this questionnaire literally applies to almost everyone on the planet. So question 1 is, at times I am much more talkative or speak much faster than usual.
Sure.
Yeah. And your dialect, it depends on where you're from. If you're from, New York, New Jersey area, you tend to speak a little faster than people that are in the South that have a drawl. But if I'm trying to hurry up and tell you something, I'm going to talk fast. So yes, that applies to me sometimes. There have been times when I was much more active or did many more things than usual.
Isn't that everybody?
Again. Yes. Again, yes, for me, because some days I have so much energy and I can fly around the house and get a million things done. And then other days, I don't feel like doing the dishes or cleaning or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Everybody needs a lazy day.
Exactly. Everybody just needs a day where you're like, I'm not doing nothing. I'm just chilling.
So how about this one? I get into moods where I feel very speeded up or irritable.
Yeah.
I can get irritated. It depends on what the situation is.
It depends who I'm around.
Just saying. Exactly. For me too. There have been times when I have felt both high or elevated and low or depressed at the same time.
I don't think I would notice. I know when I'm up, I know when I'm down, but I don't think I could feel them at the same time. I mean, how would you know?
I am the same way. Yeah, I don't think that applies to me either. At times, I have been much more interested in sex than usual. For me, that would depend on the mood. You know, if the hormones hit, then yeah, I may be a little more inclined to be more active.
I'm just going
to leave that one there.
No, I'm cool. We'll leave that alone. There we go.
That could be a whole nother show. That all depends. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a very deep subject right there.
Hell yeah.
My self-confidence ranges from great self-confidence or great self-doubt to equally great overconfidence.
I've never had that grandiose feeling. I don't have that where I am the greatest thing in the world and nobody can touch me. I've never had that. I've always been on the low end of things. Like, I self-doubt all the time. Even now, all these years later, I still suffer from that so much. I always question myself and doubt myself.
And I think most people tend to do that. Now, there are some that have the great overconfidence, but those are usually very narcissistic,
yes,
self-centered, conceited people. I would not be one of those, but yeah, I would be on the opposite side of that.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a Ted Bundy.
There have been great variations. Yeah, no, please don't be Ted Bundy. There have been great variations in the quantity or quality of my work. Again, I would think that would depend on the day, the mood, the atmosphere, your coworkers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Hell, even the weather can affect that. I mean, you know, yes, up here in Northwest PA, we just got sun today for the first time in like 11 days. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
So you're like living in the dark ages.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm in a Dungeons and Dragons episode or something.
Nice. No, don't do that. Let's see. The next one is, for no apparent reason, I sometimes have been very angry or hostile.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
That definitely is me, without a doubt.
Depends on the situation, I would think.
No, not, I mean, well, now more so, yeah, but back then, no, man, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. I would just fly off the handle.
Anything and everything?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, let's see. I have periods of mental dullness and other periods of very creative thinking. I would say that applies to me because there are some times I could sit down and write a book, and there are other times where I have like brain fart and I'm like, yeah, I can't think of anything creative right now.
Before I started taking meds and getting help, I was extremely creative. I enjoyed writing. I mean, it may have been quite macabre what I wrote, and people, you know, might have wanted to check me in just for what I wrote. But ever since I've you know, started taking meds and stuff, I don't have any urge or any creative streak anymore. None whatsoever.
That's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and that may be attributed to the medication that you're on right now. So the next question is, at times I am greatly interested in being with people, and at other times I just want to be left alone.
And again, that's just, that's every day. Like, you, It's so frustrating. I mean, there's days I want to be with everybody. And then the other days I'm like telling my family, beat it. I don't want to be bugged. Leave me alone. So
exactly. And we all need that alone time mm-hmm. or space to function.
Yes.
But that's why I think some of these questions, like very messily gross diagnose people with bipolar disorder that don't really have it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these apply to normal everyday people. Because there are times where I don't feel like being around people because, face it, there's a lot of people that are really fucking annoying.
Yes, there are.
Just going to say.
Hey, I tell you.
Just going
to
say.
There's a rule at the house. It's the half hour rule. When I get home from work, everybody leave me the hell alone for a half hour so I can get in my PJs especially after I work that long 12 to 14 hour day. I just want to get my PJs mm-hmm. and chill. Just leave me alone for that half hour. And
unwind.
Then we can be a family then. How about that, guys? And they're pretty good about it.
Yeah. You need time to unwind and relax. That's why I think some of these are just crazy, but that's just me. And the next question is, I have had periods of great optimism and other periods of equally great pessimism. So that pretty much applies to me a lot of times because although I try to be optimistic most times and look at the bright side, there are times that where I've been like, oh my God, seriously? Like, what the hell else can go wrong today?
That's
human nature.
Yeah. And if you think about the times we're in now, like how much easier is it to just be pessimistic and be on the downside? Because exactly. You know, the way things look today, it's like, get the hell out of here. Like, what's there to look forward to?
Exactly. So the last one is, I have had periods of tearfulness and crying or other times when I laugh and joke excessively. That is me in a nutshell because I'm a weirdo and my husband and I joke and laugh and whatever all the time. And there are other times where we can be watching TV and a commercial will come on. And for whatever reason, the commercial makes me cry. And it's not a bad thing. It's just my body's way of cleansing. Being an empath, I can feel everybody else's energy. And sometimes I just have to get it out.
Yeah, I do.
It'll make me crazy.
I feel like such a noodle because, you know, we'll be doing it. We'll be sitting there watching TV or whatever. And, you know, it's silly. To my wife, she might think it's silly. And then all of a sudden, I'm just like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. Oh. She's like, what the hell is wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. It just made me cry.
Elbow. Just Elbow commercials.
Oh. I got to turn off the Sarah McLachlan. Can you take care of these dogs?
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah, no, that's mm-mm. I'm like being an animal lover, that is like a really hard one for me to watch because it just really, it makes me want to go out and like hurt anybody that hurt an animal.
Oh my God, me too. I just want to go just start mashing people. Like funny, that kind of stuff. There's a chick out here where I live now. When we first moved out here, she literally lost her mind and instead of her just leaving her boyfriend, husband, she set the house on fire and her dogs were in there. And like, I just wanted to go her and pound her face into the ground, you know, because you just don't do that, man. You just don't.
And I'm the same way because animals don't talk back to you like people do, you know, and so for the most part, I like animals a lot more. And I know that sounds terrible because I'm a people person, but I literally sit outside and talk to the animals. And my husband thinks I'm crazy sometimes because like I'm talking to the birds or talking to, you know, salamanders or, you know, lizards or the deer or little bunnies or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of a weirdo.
Before we put the fence up around our yard and stuff, we had all kinds of country critters out here. We had deer and you know, the squirrels and everything and plenty of birds. And you just sit out back and you're like, hey, Mr. Deer, how are you? Oh, yeah, you're wonderful, right? And then, you know, my son and them were like, God damn, Dad's losing it. Like, holy shit, we're going to have to check him back in. Something wrong with this guy.
Yeah, see, That is another reason why you and I get along really well, because I like anybody that likes animals, and if you talk to him, that's even better.
Oh, hell yeah. It's funny because my job takes me all over, right? My job, I drive all over, and I'll stop and look at the deer on the side of the road because I live in a rural area, and I'll just be there like, hey, mm-hmm. Oh, come on, guys, get across the road. I don't want to have to run you over. Come on, move. And they just kind of look at you like, hey, idiot, just drive, man. I'm not going out there. And I'm like, okay.
And you know what's awful? I have hit a deer before multiple times. I've hit a cow, and what? I've hit a moose.
No shit.
Yes.
Now,
I
broke my cherry 2 years ago with the deer because I'm originally from Philadelphia, so, you know, I have to worry more about crackheads and dope fiends than I have to worry about wild animals. So I never, you know, and all of a sudden this deer runs in front of me. I'm like, no, Bambi, stop. Don't do it. And
exactly. If only that were a crackhead. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, well, no, that wasn't nice.
No, I'm not. Yeah. No, they can go.
I'm a jokester. So, you know.
They've ruined Kensington. But thank you.
Kensington. Yesterday, it was so cute.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Greg showed me this video of that somebody had posted where it was this woman and her husband, and she went out to go out on the porch, and it was somewhere where there's like a lot of snow and stuff. And there were like 10 deer right there at her patio, like right there by the railing of her patio, just staring at her, and she's videoing it and just like, oh, he's like, how would you feel if like that many deer met you? And I said, oh my God, I'd be in heaven. I'd be out there like trying to pet them and
yeah, sure.
Like, are you hungry? Can I get some food?
Yeah, right. Do you want a ham sandwich? I got a ham sandwich for you.
I would not do that with a bear, though, mind you.
No.
So I love bear, but if there was a bear out there, we were joking about that yesterday, and he goes, that would make for some great video, though. He's like, the bear could maul you, and I could video that.
I mean, it would definitely go viral. He would definitely get hits on that one, that's for sure. Hell, he might even make
money.
Not
that he wants me to get torn up by a bear, but it was kind of funny. Oh. So tell me, with the questionnaire, okay, and did you ever, you've never filled that out before?
I not to my recollection.
Like never in your life?
Not to my recollection, no.
Okay. Mm-mm. And that's really interesting because this is based on a scoring system. And so when you're circling your answers, it's anywhere from 0 for not at all to 5 very much. Mm-hmm. And so then you total up your score, and if it's anywhere between, if it's 15 or less, most likely, quote, wink, wink, suffering from major unipolar depression. And if it is 16 to 24, you may have major depression or a disorder in the bipolar spectrum. And if it's 25 or more, you have a high probability of bipolar, which still doesn't mean that you have bipolar. So this is a very generic questionnaire in the first place.
Yeah, it definitely is.
But since you said, so they never told you if you were 1 or 2.
Not to my recollection. Because it happened so long ago.
But there's another one that's... Yeah, it's 1, 2, and another one called cyclothymic that 99% of people don't even know exist. And so it's not really that one is more severe than the other one, mm-hmm. but type 1 is definitely worse than type 2.
Okay.
But if they never told you, then you may not have ever really been bipolar in the first place.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, because like I had no idea until you and I talked that there was even levels. Like I had no idea. The only thing that was ever said to me was, "Well, you're bipolar." I'm like, "Oh, really?" And they're like, "Here, fill your face full of these medicines, and that'll make you better." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, no problem."
And the funny thing is, with bipolar, the medications used to treat bipolar a lot of times will really, really bring out symptoms that you were never having before. Case in point, we had a really good friend that they told him, like, when he was a kid that he had bipolar disorder. And I'm like, no, you don't. I'm like, I know you really well, and you don't have like the symptoms of this. And they put him on a new medication, which was called Vraylar.
No, I never heard of that.
And it made him absolutely psychotic. Like, he was wanting to stab people. He wanted to, like, commit mass murder. He was having all these feelings that he'd never had before. It was making him sick. He couldn't eat, like, all these awful things. And I'm like, trust me, wean off, stop taking it, and you're going to feel better.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And he did.
Holy shit.
But it's like another one of those things where it's like, never filled out the questionnaire, but they told him as a kid, you have this. And he didn't, but it was making him, it changed his brain chemical makeup in such a way that it was causing him to want to commit murder and stuff, which was never part of him before.
Yeah, well, so. I unfortunately had that one already bred into me, so I didn't have the medication, definitely didn't make that for me. But I remember a time I was on a cocktail with crap, and one of the pills had just come out, I guess, was called Abilify, and that was supposed mm-hmm. to be the wonder drug. And I took the Abilify, and I felt great for about a month. I was wonderful, man. Like,
right.
I was back to my old self. And then all of a sudden,
because it takes longer than a month for it to get into your system. I'm just saying.
And then after that month, it was like all of a sudden, man, I hit rock bottom. Like, I can only attribute it to, like, say, if I had some kind of drug addiction, and that was it. Like, I was on this high, and then all of a sudden the high is gone and I crashed. And that's exactly what happened. Right. And what was funny is,
so basically it just caused you to have the symptoms of bipolar.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And all the people I knew that mm-hmm. were on the Abilify with me, we all had the same thing happen. Every one of us.
Right.
Every one of us. And it
so,
was like,
so oh. You felt really good, which is the manic phase.
Right.
And then you hit the depressive phase. So the medication itself was causing you to cycle.
Yes, absolutely. I was
just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, it wasn't until, you know, we started talking that I even noticed any of this. Like, after you and I spoke, and I started thinking about stuff, and I'm like, holy shit, like, you know, a bunch of this that happened to me mm-hmm. wasn't me. It definitely wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. It's the medications. And that's why I said they grossly misdiagnose a lot of people. And then they give you the medication, and then the medication actually causes you to have the symptoms that fit the diagnosis.
Yeah.
Symptoms that you didn't have before.
Yeah, it's almost like they give you these meds so they can justify your hospitalizations, right, your stuff.
Because
then mm-hmm. they're making money because, oh, well, he's crazy and he has to sit in the hospital for, you know, mm-hmm. let's put him in there for a month. How about that? And then, oh, well we're going to change all your meds. But then when they release me, they're like, okay, we're going to put him back on the old meds. And then, oh, that means he has to come back in 2 weeks because these.
Exactly.
And that's mm-hmm. what I went through. I mean,
and that is the medical industrial complex to a T right there. You just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it's about. It's about dollar signs. And so if you put patients on new medications, you have to monitor them, especially anything for bipolar, schizophrenia, depressive disorder, anxiety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you have to come back. You have to come back in 2 weeks. Well, guess what, people? It normally takes over a month for your medication to take effect in the first place.
Yeah, and I never knew that.
Like you said, you felt fine for a month, mm-hmm. and then afterwards, you crashed. That's because it got in your system.
Yeah, and I crashed hard.
And so, and then it's like, oh my gosh, you're having all these side effects. Well, let me get you some medication to counteract that. Oh, but you're going to have to come in 2 weeks. Let us recheck you. And it's a constant, let's recheck, let's recheck. Let's send you to so-and-so for a psych consult or, you know, an evaluation or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's send you to this specialist and that specialist. And then you have follow-ups there too. And it's a, just a vicious cycle of money.
Oh, yeah, and that's all it is. And I felt like a pin cushion because every time they would put me on some new med and it's like, okay, well, next week we need a blood level from you. Oh, we need a blood level
exactly.
from you. And I'm just like, what? Like, stop. I don't want to be stabbed
exactly because it's more money and more testing. And so the more money they can milk and bilk out of people and insurance companies, the better off it is for them. So did they diagnose you with bipolar and the intermittent explosive disorder at the same time?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Okay.
They nailed it right out the box. That's what they told me.
Okay. And if you remember, one of the questions that was on that questionnaire was about, you know, if you ever have episodes of, you know, like violence or whatever. That's on the questionnaire. But I want people to really focus on the intermittent explosive disorder, which is kind of funny because it's IED, which is the same thing as like military explosives. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So that's a little humorous, but it's something that 99.9% of people have never, ever heard of. It sounds like a completely, totally made up thing, but it is not. It is a type of impulse control disorder, or in the same family of, where you have periods of unexplained rage or blackouts or unexplained violence or unexplained behavior that are not proportionate to a situation. So that in itself is interesting because think of this, and I will tell you a lot of people could be, quote, diagnosed with this, because think about like all the women where their boyfriend or husband goes to the bathroom, leaves the toilet seat up, and then the female goes in and she has an absolute shit conniption, come apart, screaming, ranting, raving because the toilet seat is up when all you literally have to do is put it down.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. But if you think about how it's diagnosed, it's an explosive reaction that is disproportionate to the situation. So they fly into a fit of rage because the toilet seat is up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I believe that.
And so tons of people can be diagnosed with that exact same thing without ever even having heard of it or know what it is or don't understand. They're like, I don't have blackouts. No, but your behavior is disproportionate to a situation. So in turn, you would have the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's
that. And there's like a lot of triggers.
Oh, yeah. Anything. Like at one point, like it didn't matter. Like the dog could walk across my foot and then that would just send me into rage. And I'm just, you know, bashing stuff, breaking stuff. And, you know, there's absolutely no reason. Like, okay, the dog walked on my foot. Like, what's the problem? Or the dog would bark. Dog's barking. And it would just send me into a complete, utter rage. And
right. and you don't know why.
Right. And there's no, like you said, there's no reason for it. It makes absolutely no sense. But in my mind at that time, when I'm freaking out, there's absolutely every sense in the world. It made perfect sense to get angry because that dog barked and it disrupted whatever mind, you know, whatever thought pattern I was having or whatever. And therefore, it's allowed. Okay, it's allowed. I can be mad because this dog, I'm allowed to freak out because a dog barked. But, you know, after going through it, you learn that, no, jackass, it's not a reason to freak out. It really ain't. Tell the dog to be quiet, and that's that.
You know? So let me ask you, some people, like, things trigger them. Other people, like, literally it could be anything to have a trigger for. But have you or do you ever recall like any certain feelings like before it would come on or any certain symptoms beforehand? Like, you know, how have you ever heard it like migraine patients describe like before they get a migraine, they get an aura? Did you ever experience anything like that?
Yeah, when before it would happen, I would get a, it would feel like my entire body was on fire. Like I would just heat up. Like if you were to take my temperature, it probably would have just broke the thermometer. That's how hot I felt when I would just go into a rage. And I wouldn't be surprised if like I was discolored, like if I was beet red too, like that wouldn't even surprise me. Mm-hmm. But that was definitely the feeling.
Yeah. And see, that is such a, such an interesting thing because when your body gets that way, where you feel like all of that heat and that fire sensation, that is definitely an overabundance of like adrenaline mixed with other chemicals in your body. It raises your blood pressure, raises your pulse. It makes all of your neurotransmitters fire like on a crazy level and makes you very like in a excited state where you're so sped up and everything is so sped up and you get this rush and like a flush feeling, kind of like people that take a lot of niacin or something will describe that as like a flush feeling or like a fire sensation. It feels like their body's burning basically.
Yeah. It felt like I was on fire.
So yeah. And so that's your body's basically like an aura for you where your body's like all of a sudden this flood of, you know, chemicals and hormones and stuff, putting your body in that state right before the incident happens. Now, what happened after an episode? Did you get dizzy? Did you have headaches? Did you feel really exhausted, like nauseous, anything like that?
I was never nauseous, but I would be completely wiped out, like as if I had ran like, you know, a marathon or something. Like I had absolutely no juice left in the tank. Absolutely nothing.
Right. And then, that's a normal occurrence though.
Yeah.
Did you get the headache with it or not?
Sometimes like it all depended on how bad it got I basically remember just being, okay, I just want to go lay down and be in a dark room. So yeah, I guess it kind of was like having a migraine because I've had migraines in the past and that's all I wanted to do was just be in a dark room, quiet, dark room. So, and that's all after I would just rage and after, you know, it'd be done, then that's all I wanted to do was just be alone in a dark, quiet room, cold. It had to be cold too because after feeling like, you know, a 5-alarm fire, I just wanted to be cold.
Right. You got to cool your body back down. And that's you know, the fatigue, the tiredness, the headaches, things like that afterwards are because there were so much of a surge of hormones and chemicals released prior to these incidents that afterward, that's your body's way of releasing the opposite hormones to put your body back into homeostasis and to get you back into a normal situation. But let me ask you something. Have you always had like issues with anger and stuff, or was there something that, you think might've happened in your past that, that might've triggered like the start of this?
I would definitely,
I know you mentioned divorce, but was there anything with the divorce that, that caused that?
Other than the fact that my dad didn't, like my dad cheated on my mom and he brings his girlfriend to me and my two younger sisters and is like, yeah, this is my girlfriend. Me and your mom ain't working out no more. And yeah, I'm out. See ya. And it just like, because up before then, my life was fine. I had no issues in my life. We were, and we never knew, my sisters and I, we never knew that my parents were having issues. We never knew they had problems. We never heard them argue.
Right.
We never heard them fight. We didn't even know they had disagreements. So for him to come to us and be like, yeah, this ain't cutting it for me no more, I'm out. And that was that. And he literally took us home, packed up his stuff, got in a car, and left. I mean, we seen him. I mean, we had a relationship after that, but just, you know, and then that's when my life just started really going downhill because my mom was never the same after that. I had to leave my house.
Right.
We had to leave our childhood home. But like I said, up until then, it was nothing. I had nothing. I lived a decent life. My parents were involved in my life. My dad was my football coach when I was playing football, peewee football. You know, my mom was there to make sure we were doing our homework and stuff. So, and we always did stuff as a family. We always did. The only time I've ever left Pennsylvania was when I was a kid and we went to Florida and Disney World as a family. And that's it, man.
So you didn't, they got divorced and like, did you stay with your mom? Did you go live with your dad? What happened with that?
At first, me and both my sisters stayed with my mom. My dad always was willing to take me. He, for whatever reason, he just didn't want to have my sisters. And I don't know why. I mean, my dad's passed now for 3 years, and I never got that answer from him. I don't know why he always, back then, he didn't want anything to do with my sisters. The family says that he only ever wanted me and he didn't want my sisters anyway. They were quote unquote accidents, but he never treated my sisters mm-hmm. that way down the line. You know what I mean? So I don't know what's what.
Right.
But I was with my mom at first. And I just, that's when things really started. You know, she was bringing guys around. She was always depressed. I mean, she tortured me with the Beatles and Donna Summers all the time. I just wanted to break all her records. And then, you know, she's bringing dudes around.
That is torture.
And these dudes are trying to, you know, talk to me and be, you know, and trying to kind of act like my pop. And I'm like, nah, dude, that's not going to cut it. And, you know, that's when I started really acting out. Like she'd be talking to a guy and I'd just go outside and be like, okay, I'm just going to throw a rock and bust the window. How about that? And then when the guys would try and say something, I would try and attack them. I would try and stab them. I would go get a knife and be like, all right, come on, dude. I'll cut you. Like, I don't care.
So you went from being a kid to basically being a caretaker because your mom was depressed and your mom was kind of having what I'm going to call childish behavior mm-hmm. where, you know, you get in that depression phase and then like you can't care for other people because you can't get over that grief emotion to like care for your children and stuff. So you kind of stepped up.
Yeah. Yeah. For the longest time.
And you were like the adult of the house.
Yeah. For the longest time, my sisters, you know, they would actually get me like Father's Day cards because that's just how it was back then. Not that my dad right. wasn't involved with them or nothing, but I was there all the time. I was there. Like when mom didn't feel like getting out of bed, well, I was the one, you know, making them something to eat, whatever I could throw together, and, you know, stuff like that. And then it was always the three of us. Like me and my sisters were tight as could be. Like we even to this day, even though, you know, I live 6 hours away now, but we would kill for each other. Because that's just how we had to be after everything went down. We knew that no matter what, at the end of the day, it was going to be us three.
Did you and your sisters and your mom, like, stay in your family home? Or did you end up having to move somewhere else?
Oh, we had to move. We had to move. And we moved into this apartment. And I think we were there about a year. And then all of a sudden, my mom was like, it's all your fault. We have to move. Blaming me and my sisters. And we're like, what do you mean? It's all your fault. The landlord said we had to leave. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And come to find out down the road, it was because my mom didn't pay the rent. And that's why we had to move. So at that time, we got separated. My mom and sisters moved in with my grandparents. And I moved in with my dad. And that was like a whole different world for me. And I think that's kind of where the divide with me and my dad eventually came, because I lived with him for like 2 years, and he had rules. My mom had no rules. He had rules. Now, my dad wasn't a jerk. He wasn't an ass or nothing. He just was like, you're going to be in bed by this time. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Right. And this is how it is. And where with my mom, it was like, I'll do whatever I want, whatever. And so.
Yeah. And see, your dad sounds like my parents, because both of my parents were military, mm-hmm. ex-military. And so it's like very structured, organized, bed in a certain time,
yes.
TV only for a certain set of, time during the evening, homework for this many hours. Like, everything was very scheduled, and you knew not to ever screw up, because they just had that look.
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah. All they had to do was shoot me that look, and I'm like, okay, I will never get out of line, because I think you're going to kill me.
Yeah, pretty much. My dad only had to whoop my ass once, and that was because I got in trouble at school. I was supposed to do a written punishment, and I refused to do it because I didn't do anything wrong. And so after, like, I don't know, my punishment was up to like 1,000 times I had to write something. And so I kept telling the teacher, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not doing it. No. So she tried to call the house, and I ran home from school because my dad worked third shift, so he was asleep. So I ran home from school, and she called, and I answered the phone. I'm like, you got the wrong number. Click. And then she called right back. I'm like, didn't I say you got the wrong number? Click. And the third time it rang, my dad got up, and I was like, shit, I'm done. He's like, I'll get it. And I was like, damn. And yeah, I caught hell for that one. That was the only time he gave, and he didn't even really, and him and I butted heads on that. And I'm like, Dad, I didn't do nothing wrong. Why do I have to write this punishment? And he's like, because the teacher said. And I was like, Jesus Christ, dude, like, are you kidding me? So I ended up spending a whole weekend running this damn punishment 1,000 times. And then when I handed it in to the teacher, she's like, oh, she's like gloating. And I'm like, yeah, I still didn't do nothing wrong, and I disagree with this. So here, take it. You feel happy now? Yay.
So you had not only your parents' divorce, but you had to move not once, but twice or three times.
Oh, Christ. More than
I'm
that.
Assuming you had new schools, new mm-hmm. friends.
Yeah.
Like, so all of that in a, that's a lot for a kid, and stepping into that role as like a parental figure as a child. And so you had so much stuff going on. I'm just going to say, no wonder you had some behavior issues and some anger problems.
Oh, yeah.
Because you literally had no outlet.
No.
Like, at all. You were like a ticking time bomb waiting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even get to find out Santa Claus wasn't real on my own. My mom just dropped that shit on me. Like, yeah, I need your help with your sister's Christmas presents. I'm like, I thought Santa Claus does it. She's like, get over it, jackass. There is no Santa Claus. Help me. And that was pretty much it.
That's really messed up.
Yeah.
And so, like, your whole childhood was destroyed in, like, at the one package. Now, did either one of your parents ever try to sit you down and be like, hey, do you need to talk? Do you want to talk about stuff? Or were they the type of parents that, like, just brush shit under the rug and act like nothing's going on?
Oh, how'd they put it? Like, he'll grow out of it. He'll grow out of it. That's it. There's nothing wrong with him. He'll grow out of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know until after. Now, it wasn't until after I got crazy, for lack of a better term, that all of a sudden, then the whole family wants to tell me, oh, yeah, well, Pop, he suffered from this, and oh yeah, Grandma had this, and Mommy is this, and Dad, Dad had some issues, and I'm like, gee, that could have been, didn't you all think that maybe that's what's wrong with me? Like, come on, guys. Not only it's family history, genetics, and
right,
now I got this other factor. Like, I don't get it. I never got it. I never understood it, and then. Nobody still, even after I was diagnosed and whatnot, they still didn't want to admit that there was something wrong with me. Everybody still kind of was like, he'll get over it. He'll get over it. And that's just how
it's just Paul being Paul.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how they literally, that was how they said it. They didn't even try to get me any kind of help once until I tried to punch my grandmother in the mouth. That's when all of a sudden, then my two uncles, they want to try and come fight me. And I'm like, bring it, dude. I don't care. And I was only like 14. I was like, bring it. I'll fight you. I don't care. Like, whatever. And I regret it. Don't get me wrong. I regret it wholeheartedly. And after it happened, like, I apologized to my grandmother 100 million times. And she, you know, she forgave me right then and there. She's like, Paul, I don't know. And I'm like, I don't know, Grandma. I don't know. I don't know why I wanted to hit you. I have no idea. We were playing. We're goofing around. She was trying to, you know, show that all my cousins that, you know, stop being bad or this is going to happen to you. And she wasn't really doing nothing to me, but it just set me off. Like, why am I the example? Why am I always, I know I'm the oldest, but why am I always the example? Like, do it to somebody else. And I felt bad. It crushed me. It really did. And they took me to go get help. I talked to the psychiatrist and she pissed me off. I trashed her office. And then instead of my mom saying, oh, well, you know, with Paul, stop it. No, it was the doctor's fault. You set him off. See mm-hmm. what you did. And that was it. I never seen a doctor again.
And that's really sad. But like, as a child, so you're, the anger issues and stuff and the quote intermittent explosive disorder that started when you were a child.
Yeah. I would correct? Say yeah. Between, I guess it started when I was, I mean, my times are a little off, but I would say probably around 10, 12 is when I started with the, and that's about when my parents got divorced. When I think they got a divorce when I was in sixth grade. And then that mm-hmm. was the year I was with my mom. And then seventh and eighth, I was with my dad. And then my dad and I couldn't agree. I just wanted to go to the local high school where we lived. And my dad was, you know, because he couldn't have a vocational high school education, he was like, you're going to this. And I'm like, I don't want to go to there. I just want to go here with my friends and get an education. And then it was closer to my mom, the high school he wanted me to go to. And that was it. I was like, all right, I'm going to live with my mom. See ya. Which was probably the dumbest thing I ever did. God's honest truth. I should have, because once I was back with my mom, it was again, no rules. I didn't have to do nothing. And mm-hmm. then that's when I started drinking. And that's when I was 13. I started drinking. And then by the time I was 18, I was a full blown drunk. I couldn't function without having a shot and a beer. Like, that's how I started my morning. A shot of Jack Daniels and a beer. And nobody seemed to think anything was wrong with that.
Yeah, and that's a crutch for a lot of people that suffer from any kind of, I'm not even going to say mental illness, because to me, mental illness doesn't really exist in the realm that they sell you that it does. Notice I said sell.
Yeah, definitely.
Whenever you have like bouts of depression, anxiety, stress, PTSD, literally anything that they lump into mental illness. Mm-hmm. Drugs and alcohol seem to be a big factor along with this, where you had so many life changes going on at one time, and no one ever thought, and they don't still to this day, which we're a lot older than most.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes, yes.
Perfection takes time.
Yes, it does. Most certainly.
But it's one of those things where even now, like, people don't sit down and see how a move affects kids, and parents are like, oh, well, I said so, we're going to do it because I'm the parent and blah, blah, blah. And you don't have a say.
Oh, yeah.
You really need to sit down and be like, okay, look, I know it's going to be really hard going someplace new. I know you're going to be losing your friends. Let them know that you understand. Because these are real issues, especially to kids, because kids' brains are not developed like adult brains, even though there's a lot of adults that their brains aren't developed anyway.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, like kids can't think in the big picture type thing because they're still not through that growing stage yet. And so they really need things explained to them and why you have to go. And you understand as a parent, it's going to be hard. And I know you're going to miss your friends, but you're going to make new friends. We will still keep in contact with, you know, whoever, whatever. We'll try to make time where you guys can still visit together, blah, blah, blah. We have to move because, you know, mom or dad got this new job, whatever. You have to explain shit. You can't just go because I'm the parent and I said so and suck it up, buttercup, and right. Get the fuck over yourself. You can't do that because kids can't process things like that.
I give my wife like all the credit in the world that when basically what happened was when I was 18, I met my now wife, and like I said, I was drinking like crazy, and there was an episode where I was a total dick to her while she was in a hospital, and I was drunk off my ass, and I was giving her a hard time. So the next day, when I was sober, I went to the hospital to see her, and her mom snatched me up and was like, yo, it's either the alcohol or my daughter. And that day I quit. I didn't drink. I stopped. And you know, now I can drink and all that. It don't fit. But then I needed to. And that, you know, that's what did it for me. So I was good. I was good for the longest time. And then all of a sudden, I got into my mid to late 20s, and it just hit the fan. And I started having, you know, thoughts, and everybody was out to get it. It was almost like, you know, an extreme case of paranoia. But then with my, like, all my violent tendencies came back, all of them. And I had made a plan to get an AK-47, go to the Franklin Mills Mall, and I was just going to kill people because that's how I felt I needed to relieve what was building up inside of me. And I had the plan. I was, you know, somebody was going to get me the gun. And that night I said to my wife, she was going to bed because I didn't sleep. So I was always up doing nothing, just sitting in my brain, like stewing in my brain, like constantly. And I said to her, as she was going upstairs, she gave me a kiss. I said, all right, goodbye. And she caught it. She's like, what do you mean goodbye? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I meant goodnight, goodnight. And I tried to play it off. And she was like, no. You said goodbye. Why are you saying goodbye? And then she just pretty much told me that, hey, you're either going to go get help or I'm calling the cops. And that was pretty much it. So I went into the hospital. And of course, you know, I get in the hospital. They put me in the worst place in the world because I'm so violent and I'm planning to kill people. And I end up just getting into trouble there the whole time. Like I was fighting people left and right. There was a guy that thought he was a baby. He wore diapers. He sucked on pacifiers and had a bottle. And he's coming up next to me and he's like, daddy, daddy, daddy. I'm like, dude, get away from me. I'm not your dad. I'm not your dad. And then, you know, I put up with that for like a day or and a half. And then finally I just snapped and I just beat this guy into a bloody pulp. And I stopped, you know, the guys came, I stopped and they're like, oh, and I'm like, whatever. They bring the nurse over. She gives me the shot of Ativan. I go nappy time. Mm-hmm. I come back out and they're like, are you good now? And I'm like, I was good after I was done beating them up. Maybe you should just keep them away from me. How about that? And fortunately for me, I had a really cool doctor who realized that this was definitely not the ward for me. And he got me put up on a regular ward. And, you know, but again, like we said earlier, they got me all this, you know, they're doping me up, and then send me home and don't give me nothing to keep me level. And so, you know, rinse, repeat. And I did that forever and a day until finally the last time I went in, my wife said, we can't keep doing this. Me and the kids can't keep doing this. You're going to have to leave until you get it together. And that's what I did. I went and I moved back in with my mom, you know, all these years later. And, you know, that was the hardest thing in my life, losing everything.
Right.
But I had to. I know that now. Then I didn't know that. Like I was really hostile about it. And then.
Right. I was going to say angry.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go beat her to, you know, smithereens. Like, but she had to step away, and I understand that now. But then the best thing that ever happened to me was when the doctor figured out that, you know, inpatient ain't going to cut it for me. They put me in an outpatient program, and I was in a day program for 7 years. And I had, mm-hmm. I had anger management for 7 years every day. But even in there, like I had my issues, like I was quiet the first 2 years, I guess. And then after that, I got my feet under me, and then I was just, you know, I was, lack of a better word, at times I was just a dick to people because I didn't understand them. I didn't understand addiction. That was my problem.
Yeah. And that's a common thing, because the thing that people don't understand is when you have a hospitalization and you go in, you are forced to do group therapy sessions. Mm-hmm. And so they literally lump every kind of person together. So you have alcoholics, you have drug addicts, you have sex addicts, you have severely bipolar people, you have schizophrenic people, you have some people that just had a panic attack or anxiety issue, depression, whatnot, and they lump them all in a group together like a one size fits all. That would be like a one size brawl to fit every female on the planet. That is not, it's not possible, but that's the way group therapy is. And so what you said is absolutely correct, where you're struggling with your own inner emotions and temper and thoughts and stuff like that. And they're putting you with people that are drug dependent or alcohol dependent, and you don't have that same issue because you already resolved yours. And so you really can't identify with what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, because I don't, I
mean, nor can they understand you either.
Right. I have a better understanding now because I've had people close to me that suffer from addiction and stuff. But back then, like, I quit. So to me, I can't understand why you can't quit. I was given an option, and that was it. I stopped. I was done. No more. Right. I mean, same thing. Like, I tried cigarettes. No, I don't like cigarettes. Boom. They're gone. So to me, in my mind, I just couldn't deal with it. Like, I couldn't. And that was a major trigger for me at first. And then I just, you know, I would constantly battle with these people. Like, why are you in my anger management talking about how you want to, you know, smoke dope? Like, no, go to Double Trouble for that. That's what Double Trouble's for. This is my anger class.
Exactly.
Like, don't. And I would get into trouble. And there was a time where I destroyed this girl. I destroyed her because she had come into our thing forever and a day. Same shit. My addiction, my addiction, my addiction. And I just, you know, as cruel as it sounds now, I was like, yo, why don't you just go buy 10 bags and die? You will be doing the world a favor if you just die. Nobody wants you. Nobody cares about you. I'm going to tell you, you're a loser. You're a scumbag, and you should just be dead. There's no reason for you to be on this planet. And of course, there's a big thing, and everybody, oh, you asshole, you asshole. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm tired of hearing her shit. She ain't doing nothing to help herself. So why is she bothering? Like, just die. Do us all a favor and get over it. And she disappeared. She left. She was crying. She's bawling her eyes out. And everybody's, you know, coming down on me. And I was like, I don't care. I'm not going to change who I am for her. So I don't care. That's how I feel. So she came back like 2 or 3 months later. And of course, you know, I'm in the room already. And she comes in. And I'm like, oh, shit, man. This bitch is going to kill me. She's probably got a gun. She's going to shoot me in the face. I don't know. Like, holy hell. I didn't want to have nothing to do with her. And she's like, hey, can I talk to you? And I'm like, yeah, all right. What's up? And she thanked me. She thanked me. She's like, yo, nobody has ever done that to me or for me. Like, even my whole family, she's like, yeah, that day I hated you. I went out, I got bags of dope, I did my dope, and then I realized everything you said was true. And after that, after she got high, the next day she went and turned herself into recovery, and, you know, she was good from there on. And I was like, she just, you know, she's like, can I give you a hug? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay. And we were chill after that. And then, you know, my program became a crutch for me. And I always hit a point where I didn't want to go get an education, but I didn't mind sitting there talking to people about their, you know, like leading groups and stuff. And then finally my last therapist I had there was like, dude, stop. Like, you're just using this as a crutch, man. You don't need to be here no more. You're never going to be a lifer like the rest of these people are. You want to be better. Mm-hmm. You have things you're striving for. You wanted to get your family back. You got them back, you know, and all this stuff. And after he said that to me, I was like, damn, you're right, dude. And at first, even then, I was angry at him for like, why are you coming at me like this, dude? Like, isn't this what I'm supposed to be doing? Isn't this my calling per se? And he's like, it might be, but it's not here. You can't be a patient anymore, dude. You got to be a human, for lack of a better term. You got to be a productive person of society. Right. And that's what I did. And then I did after that, like I did, I found my calling. Like, my calling came out to be like helping people. Like, I worked for a special needs residential facility for 8 years, and the most fulfilling job of my life, without a doubt. You know, 80-20 job, 80% of the time, best job in the world. 20% of the time, what in the hell am I doing here? Like, you don't need this shit. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. But even at that job, I burnt myself out doing it, because that's just what you do. And now I moved 6 hours away. I live in Northwestern PA now. And my job now is I'm a driver for senior citizens, and I take them wherever they need to go. I make sure they, you know, they're getting food when shit's hitting the fan. I'm making sure they're getting to their appointments, and I'm there to listen when they just need to start yelling about how their grandchildren are ignorant, you know, little shits. And it's great, man. I enjoy it. I ain't never going to get rich doing this shit, that's for sure, but it is what it is.
But, you know, that's the thing. And that's what I always try to tell my daughter, is that it does to a certain extent matter that you make money, but you have to do something that you're passionate about and that you enjoy doing, because all the money in the world, and say you got the $1 million a year job, but you fucking hated it, you were miserable, it made you sick to your stomach every day, it is not worth it. It's not worth the stress.
No, it's just not. I'll tell you, the worst thing I did when I worked for the residential facility was I became management. And that's when I lost my passion.
Yeah.
Because when I wasn't management and I was just staff, I could interact with them kids like an adult. They were kids and adults. And it was wonderful. And then once I became management, it was all about management shit. And I hated it. And then that's when I got burned out and I stopped caring. And I started getting back into old patterns. Like, I started feeling myself, as I call it, I felt the monster coming back. And once I started feeling that, and then I was having a little outburst here and there, like, not at anybody, but like somebody would piss me off at the job. And then next thing you know, I'll put my hand through a wall again. And I was like, yeah, it's time to go. It's time to go. You know, and like I was saying earlier, because I just bounce all over. I'm sorry about that. But I give my wife all the credit in the world when it comes to my kids, because she sat down, and even when, you know, we had to separate and all, and she really broke it down for my kids. Like, your dad's sick. Like, this is what's wrong with him. Like, she didn't hide or sugarcoat nothing from him. And I think that's so important for people to know that. Don't hide this shit from your kids. Don't just say, well, daddy's going on vacation.
100%.
Like, she brought the kids to the hospital to see me, you know?
Right.
Like, it was important for them to see what I was going through. And especially now, because, you know, unfortunately with genetics, both my kids suffer from mental illness. My son, he has daddy's intermittent So, you know, but what works out is because I can help him. And what's amazing is because everything he's seen happen with me, he has better control over his at 25
right.
than I did when I went through mine, through my whole life. Absolutely. Because he's seen what happened with me. And he refuses medication. And before I used to get on him about right. it, but now I have more respect for him because I see what happened to me and what happens to his mother. I mean, his mother's sick and she's, you know, she's got physical stuff and mental stuff. And, you know, I just want to, you know, tell her to stop taking it all, but you know, she's not of that frame mm-hmm. yet. And maybe someday she yeah. will, but I mean, we know what happens when she does not take it. So I kind of don't want her to take it because she's really off the rails. But at the same time, I'm tired of seeing her suffer, you know, because she don't deserve it.
Right.
She don't deserve it. I mean, she's right. been on this ride long enough with me. And then it breaks my heart because she'll tell me, she's like, why do you stay with me? Why don't you go somewhere else? Like, I left you. Why? And I said, well, first off, my kids were little and you had to leave. Because I was off my goddamn right. rocker. And then I tell her, I said, besides that, we're married. I take my vows to heart. Like most people don't. I take my shit for real. Like right. it is till death do us
agreed.
Part. And like people are like, I have friends and they all cheat on their women and all that. And they're like, I got this girl. I'm like, I don't know. Because I seen what happened to my mom when my dad cheated on her.
Right.
So I will never cheat on my right. wife. I never would. I mean, like I said, 34 years, it's never going to happen. But, you know, she'll tell me that. And then I'll just say, look, man, I ain't got time. I'm too old now. I ain't got time to train another woman to be my wife. So just get over it.
Right.
I ain't got time for that shit. Like, get over it.
I can definitely identify with that because I am too old and too exhausted to play those kind of games.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine that shit. I would probably just be back in the mental ward again because I'd just be wanting to smash people for their stupidity. I couldn't imagine going to a bar.
You could do virtual dating and kiss with mask on.
Oh, yeah.
And have AI sexual relations. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, I could also clean. Yeah, no. I could also clean my ears with a 9mm too. So I mean,
exactly. So I just want people to know that this intermittent explosive disorder, it is rarely diagnosed. It's in around 2.7% of the population. So a very, very, very tiny percent of the world's population. And it usually only occurs under the age of 35. And a lot of patients, after the age of 35, it goes away. And it resolves, and they don't know why. They can't explain science behind a lot of it, other than one of the biggest things with that disorder is that it is a serotonin depletion. Serotonin is responsible for sleep, for mood, for memory, for your body's like reward system, your learning. Vomiting, vasoconstriction, hence the headaches, because vasoconstriction causes headaches. But you had mentioned sleep patterns problems before and how you couldn't sleep. And I'm going to guess and say you'd be up for like 3-4 days.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
And then you'd crash.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at one point they had me on trazodone and I was taking they were 150s, so I was taking 4. So I was taking like 600 milligrams a night, and I still wasn't sleeping.
Right.
And they're like, well, that's this should be knocking you out. And I'm like, well, that's not. And I'm seeing little green men now, so what the hell? And they're like, we'll give you Ambien. Oh, yeah, because I want to become an Ambien zombie.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah, that's
And even that, like, I couldn't sleep with that. And then I was doing dumb shit while I was sleeping, you know, while I was doing that. Like, I didn't know I was up. And then we're going to give you a Depakote. And, oh, thanks, Depakote. You now gained 100 pounds because I couldn't stop eating.
Exactly.
I was sleep eating because I was on the Ambien. I'm supposed to be asleep, but no, you can't sleep. So now I'm hungry because I'm taking all this bullshit. and I'm in the refrigerator, and then, you know, the kids are like, "Dad, where's all the cereal?" I'm like, I don't know. I guess the cereal fairy came and got it. I don't know.
You're like, "I don't know. Get in my tummy."
Yeah, get into my belly. And that was
so. And that's people that are, that take Ambien, they have done some crazy ass shit because they don't recall it either. I had a patient that was like 86 years old, jumped out of a second story window while she was sleepwalking on Ambien and broke her hip and multiple ribs and her wrist and tore her rotator cuff and all kinds of shit because, yeah. Ambien, it's good for the body. Anyways. Yeah.
Well, my wife was on the Ambien, and she actually...
Fun, huh?
She went next door. My best friend used to live right next door to me. And all of a sudden, I'm in bed. I don't even know. And then they're banging on my door. "Yo, Paul, come get your wife." And I'm like, "Why?" She walked over, got the kids to let her in the house next door, and she went upstairs and got in between him and his girlfriend and was sleeping in their bed. And had absolutely no recollection of it. I had to go over and get her.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, "Oh, that's enough of that shit. No, nah, we're good with that. No more of that."
Interesting. Yeah, that's Ambien. Ambien is really famous for interesting things like that. So, like, about the serotonin, since it's a lack of serotonin or serotonin depletion, a lot of people do not understand that when they think of serotonin, they usually think of the brain and, "Oh, it's made in the brain." Actually, 5% only is manufactured in the brainstem. The other 95% are produced in the stomach lining, in the gut. And so, again, gut brain biome / gut brain barrier. It's so important for not just your mental health, but your physical health, your sleep patterns, your memory, your everyday function, gas, bloating, nausea, headaches, la 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 la. It all depends on that brain gut system. And it's called the it's another nervous system. It's the ENS. Anyway, when you're talking to patients that have this particular disorder, it's important for them to understand. And this should be part of the education and teaching, but it's not because they don't teach dietary stuff or health at all in medical school anymore.
Stop. That might actually help people.
Yeah. Oh my God. Surprise.
Not that.
But you need to make dietary changes alone and sleep patterns, finding out your triggers, things like that are all things that you can do to treat things on your own without loading yourself on medication and therapy and all the other stuff. There are certain spices that are healing. There's certain fruits that are healing. There's things you should always stay away from. Like, you should never overuse antibiotics. You should never do added sugars. You should never take histamine producing foods. And so those are things like pickles, sauerkraut, gross. Soy sauce. So people who like Chinese food or Japanese food and they douse it in soy sauce, bad idea. This affects me. Sharp cheddar or any kind of aged or fermented cheese. So like blue cheese is bad. Brie is bad. Yogurt is bad for you. Buttermilk. Smoked and fermented meats like bacon or sausage, meat sticks, salami, pepperoni. You shouldn't have champagne, beer, or wine. You shouldn't eat yeasty or starchy things. So breads, pastas, white potatoes. You shouldn't have certain vegetables like tomatoes or canned veggies are like the worst possible thing on the planet.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, strawberries,
tomatoes
kiwis,
are from the devil.
Pineapple. I love tomatoes.
Tomato is the devil's fruit.
Let me say fresh tomatoes. I don't like store-bought tomatoes because they are not tomatoes. But peanuts, cashews, walnuts, peanut butter, hello, energy drinks. But you should be eating things like fresh meats. So if you have a butcher shop in your area, you should definitely get meat from the butcher shop instead of the store. It is definitely well worth it. It tastes better. It's not processed and all that crap. Fresh fruits and vegetables. So farmers in your area, you know, veggie stands, things like that. Avocado is great because avocado has a lot of healing properties and it is actually a superfood.
Yeah, a lot of you can my eat daughter sweet was potatoes. Just brought that up today about avocados. She was like, we're going to have to try avocados. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Avocados and blueberries are two of the healthiest things that you can do.
I love blueberries.
And you can actually make like brownies that are healthy that have, instead of, you know, like the cacao or chocolate or anything like that in them, you can actually use avocado, black beans, things like that, where they actually taste like brownies and they're actually really good.
Really? Well, that sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Now, here is my three least favorite things that are good for you, but I just can't do it. Brussels sprouts, because worst thing on the planet. They stink when you cook them.
Yeah, they do.
Turnips. Yeah, don't like turnips.
I don't think I've ever had a turnip.
They're gross. And asparagus. I'll tell you a little turnip story. When my brother and sister and I were little, my parents always had a garden at their house, a pretty good-sized garden. And every year they would plant turnips, and we hated turnips. They're so nasty. I don't like them. None of us liked them. And my parents were the type of people that you would eat whatever my mom fixed, and they would put it on your plate, and you could not leave the table until you finished what was on your plate.
Yes.
And so you didn't control your portions. They did. And so we had turnips all the time. Hate turnips. Hate Brussels sprouts. Both gross. So anyway, one year we were like, we're going to fix them. Screw these turnips. So we went out and stomped all over the turnips in the garden. Yeah. And I'll be goddamn if it did not make the turnips absolutely go insanely wild. And there were like four times as many.
Oh my God, really? That
what they normally had. And I'm like, oh Jesus Christ.
No way. Oh, see, I'm
Note
really
to self, don't ever stomp on turnips again.
That was Mother Nature. No. Like, oh, and you want to kill my turnips? I got your ass. I'm a quadruple.
Yeah, don't torture your children because I hate liver and onions and I hate Brussels sprouts. And so when we were little, like there was planned menus for every week and it was the same menu, like literally every week. And one day a week, we would always have Brussels sprouts and liver and onions. And you can't leave the table until you finish your plate. And I'm telling you what, it is so hard to gag them down when they're hot, but when they're cold, magnify that by like 7,000,000%. It is so gross. Like I'm barfing on my plate and your mom's like, you're going to have to sit there till you eat it. And I'm like, ew. Oh, great. Child abuse.
Oh, yum, 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 yum.
Liver and onions and Brussels sprouts with vomit. Yum, 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 yum.
That's definitely kinda doing gross. Wonders for your stomach lining.
I know,
tell you, I used to eat liver and onions, but the only time I ever ate it was when my grandmother made it. And I don't know what it was about what she made. I didn't like anybody else's, just hers. And I could eat it. No, anybody else's get me sick to my stomach. Just like she's the only person I know that makes breaded scrapple. And it's just out of this world. But none of us can duplicate her recipe. Scrabble.
What is that?
I've never, that is, yeah, what that is that? It's a Pennsylvania thing. It's basically exactly what it sounds like. It's pork or beef, and it's everything, the scrapple. It's scraps, and it's all compressed into this block of wonderfulness. Most people hate it, but
I find it
delicious.
Yeah, kind of like head cheese, where they just smash all that stuff together into a block, and then, like, yeah.
Yeah, you cook it or you fry it up. It's the best.
Mm-mm. Nope.
No? Doesn't even sound appealing, nope. Huh?
No, that is going to make my gut-brain biome sick. No. Yeah, but that's the thing is, like, just small things that you can do, like, on your own. Like, I know you said you, like, went in the hospital a lot. You did anger management, things like that. They put you on a whole host of, holy crap, like, every medication under the sun.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, what do you do now?
I only take lithium. That is the only thing. I take one lithium a day. I take it at night before I go to bed because for whatever reason, that does help me sleep. And that's it. I don't take anything else. I don't go to therapy. And my therapy per se is listening to podcasts. I listen to your podcast. I listen to No Mercy, The Horror Junkyard, Conspiracy Horsemen, Hami Media Group, Goldilocks. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, because all you guys just, it keeps my brain active. It keeps me thinking and it keeps me learning and I'm becoming educated. So I don't have time for my head to just be like, oh, mush. Yeah. And, you know, I got a couple guys that I met on Twitter, Armand, Hans, and Pickles. And we just kick it and we'll just talk shit about everything and everybody. And, you know, it helps. And, you know, I look back to my therapy days and I'm like, you know, I learned so many lessons and, you know, it's conquerable. You can beat this shit, man. Mm-hmm. If you really want to, you can beat it. I mean, you can't let yourself fall into that self-pity. I mean, I've hit the lows. I know what it's like to be, you know, down and out and have lose everything, but I got it all back because I wanted it.
Right.
And, you know.
And I think it's important for people to not get in that, like, victimhood state where, oh, my God, this is my diagnosis. Yeah, I'm going to be this way forever. Might as well just deal with it. Sad, yeah. Mopey. No.
Yes.
Pick yourself up and do shit to make yourself better.
Yeah, here, I'll make AOC mad. I'll pull myself up by my bootstraps. How about that? But I...
such a character.
Oh, yeah, she's just ducky. But I it's so much that people can do. And like you said, when I first was diagnosed, I did that with exactly what you said. I'm going to be like this forever. I'm just going to be a loser. I'm not going to be able to do anything in life. I'm just going to be a mental case. And then it was like, nah, dude, nah. There's so much out there for a man. There's so much. And you know, people have to stop being afraid to talk about it.
Right.
But and I'll tell you what's crazy, though, in my view, it's like almost, yeah, I don't know how to phrase this. Because of the way things are today and everybody's so damn sissified that you don't know if what they're going through is real or it's just them being a damn baby. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's so hard because everybody is taught now, everybody has something wrong with them. Even like today, when we read that whole questionnaire, I'm like, no, that don't mean there's something wrong with me, bro. That means that this is life.
Exactly.
Like you can fix this.
That you're human and everybody has up and down days, up and down moments. Everybody has a different gamut of emotions that they'll experience stuff. And here's another super important thing. Get outside in the fucking sunlight.
Yes.
Because the more you sit in the house, inside, indoors, in the dark, the more deeply depressed your body system gets, not you necessarily being depressed, but it depresses your senses, which in turn cause you to release those chemicals that throw you into a depression or into a panic or into mood swings or whatnot, because you're not getting the fresh sunlight and the fresh air and things like that that you need to actually heal. Stop staying up all night every night. Do things to put yourself on a schedule. You have to eat healthy. That is so important, especially with any kind of medication that you're on. You have to eat on a regular basis. You have to eat healthy, because when you do, you're going to notice a difference in your reparative sleep pattern. You're going to actually be able to sleep better. Plus, you're going to feel rested when you get up. Cut off social media. If that's a trigger for you, stop that. If other people are toxic, stop that.
Yeah.
You have to make all of these changes in your life, or you're never going to get better, regardless if they have you on 75 different medications.
Right.
You're not ever going to improve, because you're not doing what you need to eliminate the shit from your life.
Oh, definitely. I
just saying.
Like I was saying earlier, we had 11 days of darkness here, and now today I feel so great today because it was sunny. So, like, don't listen to this nonsense about staying in the house and this and that. Get the hell out, right, man. Enjoy your life. Like, right, don't be living fear. Like, live. Right. Don't live in fear. Don't let this become crippling.
Yep. Because you only have one life to live. And, you know, most of us get one chance mm-hmm. at life. And so, to be the healthiest you can possibly be and to be the best that you can possibly be, the changes start with you. The changes don't start in a doctor's office.
Right.
Just saying.
And I'm grateful. So, like, I feel like I got a second chance, and I'm running with it. And, you know, that's what people have to do. You know?
Exactly.
Work a long day. Work your 14 hours. Put your PJs on and just chill, man. Just chill.
Exactly. That's my favorite time of the day. I love that.
Right?
Absolutely. That's relaxing time.
Oh, yeah.
So, my dear, where can they find you at?
I am on Twitter at BigEvil6975. The header is BigEvilPops. That's pretty much my main thing. I mean, I'm on Instagram, but I couldn't even tell you what the hell it is. And I have Facebook, but I keep that pretty much just for my family. And, you know, because I can't do anything fun on air anymore, because I'll just bang you because you're a bad man.
I know, right? Don't post pictures of your kids, god dang it, because that goose gets company standards.
Oh, my. Yes. Ain't that the truth? I'm actually surprised I haven't got... I'm surprised I haven't got booted on Twitter yet.
Oh, let's see. I have a couple of times. Anyway.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. So you can find me at Twitter at KNOW Janet. You can find me on Instagram at Deplorable Janet. And I'm on Gab as well at Deplorable Janet, although I have trouble logging in. So if you send me anything on there, I probably won't see it. But like, subscribe, download, and share, comment if you'd like on the podcast on Podbean, since we were removed everywhere else because Big Tech is Satan. So anyway, for me and for Paul, have a lovely day, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.